Hello, and welcome to the TAA teleconference, Grants Gamesmanship, presented by Dr. Jay Madison, Executive Director of the Text and Academic Authors Association Foundation. Jay has been a professional educator for 40 years. 20 of those years were spent providing operational and instructional leadership to medical and allied healthcare academies, associations, and businesses in the study and clinical practice of pain management and physical medicine and rehabilitation. Jay offers a unique perspective to the grant seeker as he has served in the lead role as both grant maker and grant seeker. This includes grant oversight and management of protracted, large-scale, multi-million-dollar projects for state education offices, as well as principal investigator for procurement, award and administration of corporate and university contracts, and grants focusing on education and training in science, technology, engineering and mathematics, and biomedical technology innovations. I now turn the teleconference over to Jay Madison.
Hello, everybody. I'm in Tallahassee, Florida today. Gorgeous. We're about 75 degrees. And I'm just really happy to have you all here together. First and foremost, if you have access to your computer, I'd like you to be looking at several handouts that we're going to work with throughout the teleconference. The very most important ones that you should be paying attention to is handout number two, which is called Discover the Top Grant Givers. I also have a handout that specifically addresses leadership and development for the what we call the community framework. We'll be using this one to discuss actually how we manage time, increase efficiency, and streamline performance in our grant writing process. And the other one is basically a checklist, and I'm going to take you through that checklist. And as we move through it, from time to time, I'm sure there'll be some questions. So don't hesitate to ask that. As you heard, I thank you, Jenny, for the overture there. I've been in the business of pain medicine and physical rehabilitation. I did that for about 20 years, and during that time I found that in order to survive, I had to acquire external grant funds. So over those years, I got close to a lot of different people, and I want to say that for this 1 hour, I know I'm going to be talking somewhat about some of the federal agencies, and there may be some people who may think that, well, maybe we're not competitive enough for those kinds of things, or perhaps we're independents, and that doesn't really, fit our what we're going after. But I want you to know that if we are talking about foundations, I'm going to demonstrate to you that those foundations really do tie and link. And use the creative forces of these very large agencies as not only a buffer, but as a model, as a template. So basically what I'm saying here is that if I talk to you about the Natural Science Foundation and their rules and policies and procedures, or if I talk about the Institutes of Health, these are really the greatly founded like templates, and if we can learn to write to them, then we can write to anything. And so, for example, when we create our first grant writing theme, whatever that may be, what your interest is and what you're pursuing, I'm going to take you through that guide. And I know you'll have some more questions about that because oftentimes when you're writing foundations, they don't have all those very specific details that they have to and hurdles they have to overcome. But we're going to use these as the templates. All right, first and foremost, I want to begin by looking at the handout, which is called the Online Leadership and Development Community. I've designed this over a number of years. I finally got to a point where I could say that I feel comfortable enough to share this with you. It's basically a model that you can create like on a desktop. If you're following along, basically at the top you could see that I have little file folders. The primary ingredients of this frame is envisioned in four principles. Moving left to right is a folder called Your Vision, and that moves to the great ideas, and those great ideas basically have to do with the grant makers. Oftentimes we say in the grant business that typically we have an idea, and so suddenly we decide we want to write to that idea, and then we run out and we try to find funds to support it, and then we end up trying to meet deadlines. And oftentimes, if we follow that that path, our likelihood of success is greatly reduced. What we really need to do is what grant writers say is the value of being more proactive in the grant writing process. And that means is that once you get an idea of your vision, then you really need to discover the visions or great ideas of the people you're asking money for, because they're the ones that are really establishing the guidelines, and they're the ones that understand what they need and why they need it. So what this particular framework, I'm going to suggest, and I'm going to talk about this a little later at the end, but you could even set this up on your either like on an Outlook, where you can create little folders, and in the folders you'd have like one that says this is your vision. Another folder would be the great ideas. These are specific to the grant makers. And then we have a very special folder which we call Merit and Benefit Impacts. This basically is what I term the alignment statement. It's the statement that aligns your vision with the great ideas of the grant makers. The primary criteria for measuring whether a grant proposal is accepted or not has to do with the merit, which we call the intellectual merit of that grant, and the benefit impacts. Now, I will talk a little more in detail about that as we go through the checklist, but I want you to put these, really underscore them as very, very vital to the success of any grant writing project. The four folders that you'd have in, say, even in your Outlook book or on your desktop would be the research plan itself. Now, underneath in the handout, you'll see I've created another, these are subfolders. And in here, you'll see that I've termed them the work group themes and tasks to be accomplished. These subfolders are primary activities that you must enjoin over a period of time. I'll give you an example. A typical R01 type of grant for research or early career type of grant that you seek, maybe through NIH or through NSF, that will typically require about 6 months of really good planning and time. So it's very important that when you're searching for these grants, you get a head start early. I will say to you that in the average, we've actually pounded this out and we've realized it takes about 160 hours of productive time to produce a winning grant. Now, if you will see the subfolders that I've created, they're designed to literally establish a timeline and a calendar, and the activities follow in a certain sequence of events. So, for example, when I've labeled some of the keys, they start like collaborate and network. And within the collaboration and the network, what your tasks here are to essentially establish your home review team, understand and make contact lists with your program directors, and also have greater understanding about who's going to actually review the grants. And moving from then, other challenges to the grant timeline would be developing your letters of support, of course, creating your budgets, and then your final submissions and checklist. I'm going to put the framework aside for now, and I'm going to ask that if anybody would like for me to give you more details about how you can actually create this as a time management tool for creating successful grants, I'll be glad to share that with you. That takes a great deal more detail. All right, the primary objectives for the day. First of all, I'm going to go through the checklist. We're going to move through that with our first attention to the vision. And if you would then open the document, which is called the Grant Discovery Preparation and Submission, this is what is termed as the classic checklist of things to accomplish. And we'll begin by looking at your vision. I'm going to give you some basic steps we're going to follow through, and please don't hesitate to ask any questions as we move from from one point to the other. Beginning with your vision, there's two things that you need to do. Number one, I'm going to suggest that you form a work group to help you with this. This is not something anybody should do alone. You have to have many eyes to help look at the grant writing process to help you with it. But it is always begins with your vision, and this is really your idea and where you want to go. Now, I had asked people to submit a pre-survey so I could get an idea of where people are thinking these days, and I appreciate many of the comments that you made in those questionnaires, and I will say absolutely that out of the number that I received, there are at least 90% of those I received have a clear idea already of what their vision is. And when they made the statements contained within those surveys, they actually composed their vision statement, and they did it in a very clear and concise way. And this is the other part about writing the vision statement. I must say, no matter how good your vision is, if you can't communicate that idea to the grantmaker, then we'll have very little success in having it reviewed positively. When you write your vision statements, I'm going to give you what are currently called the transformative types of words which grantmakers are looking to today. This is where reviewers, when they sit in discussion groups, when they talk to each other, they are constantly conditioned to look for various things in the vision statements themselves. And oftentimes you hear these words over and over again, but they really have very deep meaning, words as like the meaning of novel, innovative, and transformative. In the previous administration, last 8 years or so, some of those words that were used and study groups were trained in, had words like research-based attached to them. It's important, of course, to be able to support, your ideas with good research, and of course, it's good to have it research-based, if possible, from randomized types of trials. But I will say to you that when you write the vision statements, which are part of your summaries and your narrative reports, you really need to go beyond just making kind of dry types of statements. You need to be able to have compelling and persuasive arguments. I can't tell you how important it is to be able to have a compelling argument that is clear to the reviewer right at the beginning. I'm going to suggest that you write at least three vision statements, and when you get together with a group, and who that might be would be at least two of your colleagues and perhaps a couple of your students, if you have students. I know many of you are not teaching right now. But when you've written this statement, I'm going to suggest that you create a keyword list. In other words, once you've read the vision statement, you've looked at it and you say, well, I can see that there are really some conceptual ideas here and some key principles. Let these become your keyword list. So, because when we begin to search the grant makers to learn what their great ideas are, you're going to use these keywords to search. And there are many ways of doing this, and I'll give you a couple of examples. Using, say, for example, the CRISP database with NIH. You can also go to NSF and you can search through their what they call search awards, using the keywords. But essentially what you're doing now is working to align your vision with the grantmaker's great ideas. All right, moving along, I don't know if you've been watching recently with the stimulus package. I know I have. I've got a corporation that when I'm not working as the executive director for TAF, I'm involved in establishing renewable energy projects here in the state of Florida. And I know that in the last number of committee meetings that we have been involved with here in the state, that we have great attention being paid to the what is called the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. And I'm going to suggest that if you haven't gone up to the government's website, which is called their transparent website, that you do that. Because they have given you links to all the major departments and all the fundings that are available. And you may think, well, maybe it's only about renewable energy or maybe it's about transportation, but the fact of the matter is it's spread wide. And when I reviewed many of the surveys and saw the fields of interest, everything from safety and violence studies, to studies of the sociology, the economics, even including language and learning of language, there are many types of representative monies that are available. But you're not just there looking for a particular grant, you're also looking to see how the money is being distributed, and that includes the monies that go to the Department of Education, for example, which essentially has had a great increase in the budget, and responsibly will, I think you'll be able to, in the very near future, I'm saying within the next 30 days, see postings and announcements for awards from, especially in early development childhood education, special education, and of course, middle school and secondary education in the STEM careers, which is science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. All right, looking for, the grant maker's great idea is basically, plugging in these keywords and beginning to compile a list of I call it a master list of who these folks are and what their mission and what their purposes are. So when you're doing this, by the way, you go to the major websites. I'm going to give you a couple of keys. I find these to be like what I call my games keys, is that whenever you have opened up, an announcement, for an award, if it's whether it's through the federal government or whether it's through a foundation, make sure that you look to see who their co-donor partners are. Usually these are in the internet, they're shown as either banners or as logos. And don't hesitate to click on those because you may see that the Knives for Science Foundation is also associated with the Pew Charitable Foundation or the McKnight Foundation, or they're working with one of over 150 different foundations in the United States. In other words, their ideas, their great ideas, are actually working, together in tangent with one another. While you're also searching through for the great ideas, make sure that you make a note to determine the method of solicitations, which the awards may be given. Also, I'm going to recommend that you understand the geographic giving patterns of the different foundations that you may be searching with. All right, now, the most important part of all this, of course, is getting to what I call the alignment. And in the alignment process, as you begin to search and you're working through the different lists, I want you just to break it down so that you get into what I call a top 10 list of people that look like and are talking in the way that you're thinking as well. And then I want you to develop a list of questions. Now, on the basis of those questions, once you have the questions in hand and you have studied that foundation and their partners and you know something about their mission, especially, say, in the areas of, like, diversity, then I want you to give a call to the grant makers. And I want, this is really first contact. This is what I call development of collaborative networks. Oftentimes, we spend so much time in just trying to, develop the idea itself, we get way ahead of ourselves. If we would just take a little time and stop and say, yes, I have reviewed what the grantmaker wants, I have an idea of their purpose and their mission, then I'm going to give them a call. And that first call, by the way, is usually not to the program director or the responsible SRO officer. It's usually to the help desk of the whatever agency that may be, just to get specific details, including their frequently asked questions. Now, building your grant writing process, you will include those in those subfile folders, which begins to say, yep, here's all the materials that I need to make whatever downloads are required for the application. I want to make sure that I understand how to determine whether I am eligible for that or not. And if I'm not, who do I have to partner with in order to help me get involved with that, either as a principal investigator or as a co-PI. And then after this is said and done, you should then begin to create the contact list. And essentially, at this time, let's say, for example, if you're working with NSF, you'd be interested in talking to the program officer who is the responsible party for that specific announcement. And I'll tell you, over the years, I've been greatly enjoyed working with program directors. Oftentimes, they are university professors who are literally on leave for a couple of years, and they have a responsibility in that particular subject matter area of expertise, and they're the right person for it. So give them a call. I think they will tell you wholeheartedly, what's up and the directions that they're moving towards. Trying to communicate and understand words that you read in announcements are very limiting to what could be possible by just talking in a very face-to-face fashion with the program director. All right, now continuing along our checklist, this is now when we start beginning to develop a timeline of schedules, and these are our deadlines, understanding our methods for submission. And very critically, this is oftentimes where people really fall down in the grant writing process. They haven't read the program announcement clearly enough to know the essentials of what is being required. And, of course, the primary essential right from the beginning is always knowing what the grant maker has told you to do when you submit that application. Do not be creative with your formats. My suggestion is you always don't ever make anything smaller than a font of 11, and make sure that you adhere to format requirements and never exceed the page limit whatsoever. Oftentimes, if you do that, you'll get rejected right from the beginning. All right, moving along, here we are in what we call the discovery. This is the review process. You may find that as you work with a team, and that team, I'm going to describe actually how many people it should make up and when you should actually meet. I want you to make a special note that when these announcements are made, they always have links, to what are called the requirements or the criteria for the review of the grant itself. And I want you to create a separate folder, as you see in the frame that I gave you at the beginning, called the Reviewer's Instructions and Criteria. I'll give you a couple of examples of how critical this is. Usually when you understand what people are going to review and the criteria that they have established for it, this will certainly help guide you in the process of what you need to write to. Writing is an extraordinary task, and communicating writing in accordance with their ideas is really the fundamental we need to keep in mind. I'll give you some examples of how you can actually, where you need to go for things like this. Let's say, for example, if you were doing something with NIH and any of the institute centers, I would recommend that you would go up to the NIH Center for Scientific Review. And in there you would see a collection of different kinds of very specifically delineated projects that are ongoing, and you would see, as you open those up, they would say, here's the peer review study groups, here's the criteria of the selection groups. They would actually give you the names of the different officers responsible for it, and you could, as you begin to make contact with them, find out exactly who makes up these different committees, and I certainly wouldn't hesitate to find out as much information I can about reviewers as possible, because these are, again, the keys to the game's grantmanship that allows you to increase your chances for a very successful grant award. I would very gladly, at the end of this, to provide anybody with the different links to all these things. I have a rather large playbook, and in that I've accumulated quite a number of very important links not always easily found. I'd be glad to help you with that if you need it. Let me give you an example about, one now I'm working on right now has to do with an SBIR award. And these are Small Business Innovation Awards. And I was just noting this just a couple of weeks ago, some of the things I have to pay attention to when I'm writing for some renewable energy projects. And as an example, when a reviewer is looking at your proposal, some of the things they're going to be looking at and they're going to be actually scoring on is the number one is right at the top is the significance of the project. They're also going to be looking at the approach that you take to this project. They're going to be asking questions about was it innovative, and they want to know about you too. In other words, who you are as the investigator, and how polished you are, and how far you have come. Those are some of the key statements. But you know, later as you get down in the reviewer's checklist, you begin to see some of the really important parts. Especially if what I say, these are the little things that make the difference, and oftentimes these have to do with the your human studies types of projects or animal projects, if you're in the say animal testing sciences. And of course, if you're just doing K-12 types of projects, secondary, post-secondary, of course there would have to be your IRB that's associated with the inclusion of women, the inclusion of minorities, and the inclusion of children, for as an example. All right, so overall, the sum of that is I want you to pay special attention to the actual reviewers, who they're going to be, try to gain access, knowledge about what their specialties are. You might think of them as usually people who are professors themselves with very busy schedules. They're oftentimes senior faculty. They're not always, but they generally are. And they may have only about 1 hour, really, to read your proposal. So let's make sure it's the cleanest proposal possible. Now I want to talk a little about the work plan itself and the scheduling of the work plan. And when we go through this, I'm referring specifically, to the framework, that I set up for you. In the work plan, I'm going to recommend that you create a work group. And whether you're in the university or whether you're an independent person, you're going to need a work group. And over the years, when we did studies in professional development and what are also called faculty and professional learning types of centers, we came down to a formula about what is the ideal work group. And we essentially found that it takes at least a minimum of 6 and no more than 8 to make these groups really work well. Now, out of that, let's just use 6 as an example. At least 2 of those should be in-field experts. That is, in other words, these are your home reviewers, people who are helping you with your project, and they have expertise in the same field that you do. But you also are going to need one person who is an out-of-field expert. And my recommendation there is usually somebody who has an independent type of judgment, can read something. Maybe they don't have all the details and knowledge of your field, but they should be like a good, let's say, a science editor, for example, or a good editor, just in general. Somebody who's a good writer is also a helpful person. But it might also be somebody who has knowledge of finance and budget. Now, if you do have students, then I'm going to recommend that you find at least 1 graduate student, if available, and 2 undergraduates. And out of these 3, I'm going to suggest that you sit down with them and you tell them that this is an opportunity for them to participate in this frame, which we're declaring a leadership and development community. It's better to have very net savvy students as opposed to just tech savvy. But generally, if they're tech savvy, they're usually net savvy as well. All right, so this is your core work group. And once you've formed it, you're going to have your first meeting, and these first meetings should be face-to-face. The meeting should last about an hour and a half, and in those first meetings, you should create what I call work themes. And during within these work themes, you'll be very focused on going through your checklist and making sure that everybody's doing their part. So in other words, the students would be assigned. One person might be assigned just to get all the different materials together that's necessary, you know, for the submission. Excuse me. Got a little frog in my throat here. Another work theme would be, of course, to begin to perform a literature review. I'm going to recommend, a number of different, areas that you, of course, you know, in your own field, you have ideas about where to do the literature reviews. But if you're in science, one of that I particularly like is called the Grants Net, which is found at the Science Mag organization. Another, part of the assignment within a work group would be the development of the research plan itself. And when you get to this point of developing your research plan, make sure that you enlist the support, get several hours of help from either a psychometrician or a biostatistician, depending on the project. All right, later down the line, you will need one other person to help you with the grant process, and this is what I call an independent fair witness. This should be a senior faculty person, someone who is not really politically connected, to the grant that you're working on. All right, continuing. Excuse me. My goodness. One thing I failed to tell you, it's the pollen time of the season here in Tallahassee. So I'm struggling with some pollen here in my throat, I think. All right, putting it all together, in terms of streamlining the process, this is a critical step. It takes 160 hours to do this job. And when you look at the busy schedule that you have, it's a very monumental task, to do this and do it right. So in the framework that I designed for you, what I found to reduce stress and to streamline the process, if you do your first work group face-to-face, then from that moment on, you should hold another work group face-to-face about every other week, and that you should do for at least 12 weeks. So you've met 6 times, and what that means is that within that hour and a half times 6, you spent about 9 hours of intensely working on composing the products that were assigned outside that face-to-face workshop. So let's say, for example, out of the 5 other people that you're working with or helping you, if you will spread the assignments out across the board, give each one of them responsibility to handle a part of the checklist, then what they can do is they can do the work, they can upload it to one of those folders that you've created on your desktop, and then that folder will be available for all members of the work group to review. So by the time you actually came to a face-to-face workshop meeting, a lot of the preliminary work would already have been done, and people would have already viewed it several times before. Now, by doing this, you can actually cut about 25% of your time off because you've just developed a good organizational model, and you've been able to distribute the work across the workload across the group. I think there should always be a great incentive to do these kind of things, and one thing I've told students that I've worked with in the past, and I've written numerous letters of recommendation for them over the years, I made this community a part of their resume builder. And I found that in the world of like mentor roles, that this is really something very close to my heart, is helping students, mentor students, and those students mentor other students. And so this is also a part of the leadership and development community that I believe we should embrace in the grant writing process. When I did a review of the key questions that are most required, of a grant, they follow the same pattern year after year with very little change. But I do want to tell you what they are, and I've given you a handout that I acquired from the National Science Foundation. It's within the Department of Undergraduate Education. And in it, I think it's one of the best statements that I've seen to date, what is called the broader impacts criterion. And I want you to be able to, at your leisure, you know, open that document up and study it. And even though it's just specifically dealing with NSF's Division of Undergraduate Education, it certainly has ramifications and implications to any field of study. But when you talk about the broader impacts, I'd like to say that oftentimes, including myself, when I was writing grants, I had a pretty good handle on writing what I thought was the intellectual merit of my project, but I didn't always have a good handle of what it meant in terms of the broader impacts. So I just want to say this to you, that in that document I've acquired, it gives you very, very specific information on the impacts and what they're looking for. So they can actually be summarized in the following. That is a project that advances discovery, that a project includes or deals with diversity, issues of diversity, which is the underrepresented, a project that advances the cause for enhancing the infrastructure, and also is very illustrative of the benefits to society in general. And also something that is oftentimes missed is what we call in the grant writing process the sustainability of any project. And as a part of this has to do with what's called the dissemination, so that once you've created a grant and you won the award and you start producing it, one of the reasons they're going to award it to you is because it's either going to be sustained, hopefully, and or is definitely the product's going to be disseminated, and how is that going to be done. So keep that in mind. All right, I want to make sure we don't run out of time here, so I want to go down kind of quickly here some of the subfile folders in the frame, and I want to deal with the partners themselves. And I want to say that in the collaboration and the networking, yes, number one, you have your own home people to help you with, and then you have your program directors who will also give you a great helping hand, but you also need to collaborate and develop partnerships. I noted that when I do these surveys and I ask participants to fill them out, when they come to the point of community outreach, I want to say that what that term means, community outreach, is really you as a partner with something that exists locally or something regionally. We really need to have that as a part of a statement within our grant process that says that the vision that I have or you have and the way it's aligned to the mission and the purpose of the grant maker demonstrates somewhere within the grant process that you have partners who can help fulfill that promise. And the reviewers in previous years and even up to even more so today look to the principal investigators. When they look at their bios, they look very carefully about who they're collaborating with and how they're doing that. So I want to put a big underscore under that to develop partners as much as often as possible. And, of course, these are the folks that you're going to be obtaining letters of commitment for to support the projects, and including you might have advisory boards as well that gives more credence to the grant award. All right, overall, I think I'm going to move rather quickly, but I want to say, because, again, not running out of time, one of the work groups that you need to have early on is a practice writing workshop. You could have a great idea, and you could have done all your homework, but if we can't communicate the idea, then it's all for naught. So in a practice writing workshop, once we've gotten to a point where we've done our literature reviews and we started writing our intellectual merit statements, and We've written our impact benefit statements. Then I'd like us to have an actual writing workshop where we would sit down with our group in total, and we would start hammering out the pieces which are most critical to the grant. I'm going to give you an example of a writing exercise. When you have created your very powerful statements of impact, you take that statement and then you work that statement into other parts of the grant. In other words, you only say it one time. It needs to be said again and again and again, even verbatim. It needs to be seen by that reviewer so that they're reminded that of the continuity, of your grant and its impact. Keep that in mind. These are writing exercises and very important to the grant award itself. All right, lastly, as we get towards meeting our deadlines and getting ready to submit, make sure that you're in contact with the program directors or the science review officers. Get to know them very well. They will be there, to help you. I don't think I can say over the last 5 years I've never had a program director who didn't get back with me and who wasn't willing to talk to me about different issues. Lastly, a little statement, just something to say about the budget itself. This is to me, a very important key. I've won grants and lost them just because I didn't know the cutoff limits of some of these budgets. So when you read the program announcement, it's going to give you a general idea of what that cutoff limit is. And I want you to be very careful to adhere to that. But don't let that just be the final way of doing it. You talk to your program directors as well. And also, as an example, working with the National Science Foundation through the Office of Budget, Finance, and Award Management, you can actually get very wonderful statistics on how different institutions have been awarded, by state and by institution, and including the merit review process reports. So these can be wonderful information to gather and place in your archive, so that you have a better handle on exactly how you're going to cost your grant. All right, I'm going to skip over the part about direct and indirect costs. This is something you probably need to talk to your budget officers about who are up on the rules. Finally, in the preparation for the final submission, I'm going to ask that you, when you get that package together to a point, that you've had this fair witness reviewer, who's somebody who's going to be really so honest with you about what your work team has created, that you're willing to hear all. And this fair reviewer, you need to try to provide them as best as possible with a what I call the reviewer scoring rubric. And if you'd like to talk more about rubrics and scoring criteria, I'd be glad to handle that at a different time. All right, lastly, make sure that in the final stages of submission that you have followed all the rules. And, now electronic submissions are becoming very important, in the federal agencies. So if you haven't practiced this in a while, it might be a good idea to start reviewing those procedures and getting some practice in about exactly, how to get that into the system without errors. It's not uncommon that people, will paste into the records and follow all the rules and watch for the announcement because the government will come back and say that there were difficulties in the transmission. All right. Lastly, the last thing that we're going to compose, of course, is either the cover letter or our summary statements. And, of course, prepare the letters of support for the final submission. And in the end of the checklist, I've given a little statement. It was called The Little Things Can Make a Difference, and I'm going to allow you to read that at your own leisure. But this is a kind of a summary of those things which can go awry if we don't pay attention to them, which could actually kick your grant out. All right, with that said, let's just end that, and If you have any questions, let's talk. Hello?
Hello?
Remember to press 4-star to unmute yourself if you want to ask a question.
Hello?
Hello there.
Oh, yes. This is Jay.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I like your material. Thank you very much for I have written a couple of grants. I haven't have been awarded anything, but I think this is going to help a lot. But I'm going to have to go through your materials and maybe I'll need some personal contact available after some time. So anyway, I certainly appreciate what you did.
Well, Richard, let me say this to you. I read your survey, and I appreciate what you said. And that those surveys are very important. If anybody hasn't submitted their survey, they should do that. You will give me a very good idea of where you're searching for. And I promised TAA that if I got the surveys in and I saw where people's interests were, I would do my best to acquire some links for you so you can move forward with your projects. And you know, use my experience of 40 years to help guide you in that process. We do have a wonderful time right now because of the stimulus package. There's a lot of monies available for different things. And oftentimes when you're looking for these things, you read these announcements, you just don't always know that there are other possibilities, you know, how to tie that, especially with the partners within the different agencies. And partnerships are really, really important, and they help lead us and guide us to other grant types of awards. And when I say grant awards, that can mean you know, even small foundations who want to give you money, as long as you know how to get to them. And so I want you to go look at that material I provided for the top givers, just to show you as an example about say one of your work teams can create. It's the Excel spreadsheet. I want to put a plug in too for the foundation. This is the Texan Academic Authors Foundation. I've been charged by the board to make sure that the initiative for diversity in the advancement of education occurs. And I noted that many of you who sent your surveys also have similar interests in diversity. So if you are of a mind and want to partner with the foundation, we are a nonprofit foundation. We're a 501c3. And, of course, I have a rather long list of very eminent professors who sit on the board and or associated with TAA who would be willing to help. The foundation, in other words, would either become a principal investigator or a co-PI with you. And it's important that we understand a lot of these grants are not just of the national scene, but in regionally, where foundations actually give their monies. I'll give you an example. In the South, 25% of the awards are in education. But if you go up to the West, you might find a larger percentage, you know, directed towards healthcare, for example. So if you're in California, then I want to talk to you if you're interested in healthcare. If you're in the South and you're about talking about education and safety and things of that nature, then I want to talk to you about that as well. So those are possibilities that we can get involved. All right.
Yeah, well, I think one of the things I want to do is circulate my vision, at least generally, through TAA and through with your help to find other professors who are really interested in the same type of vision to work together. I've had some people to work with. They haven't been as active as I would have liked. So I think we'll have to go ahead and I'll have to think about it a little more.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Okay. That's it?
Yes.
Okay.
Do we have any more questions?
Okay. I'll sign off. Bye.
Bye, sir.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hi, this is Katie Pinto from California.
Hi, Katie.
I'm in sociology at Cal State Dominguez Hills. I had actually one question maybe to follow up on establishing a work group. It sounds like the work group should be established with particular attention to maybe targeting a specific grant or project so that the people that maybe are part of the work group should be listed also as co-PIs. Is that sort of what you're suggesting?
Yes, that's correct. That is right. And especially if you say if you have inner departments that are also involved, like in the STEM disciplines, you know, you may be crossing over to different departments.
Mm-hmm.
And want those other faculty who also have the same charge, you know, the same interest, and they would become your they could become a you know, co-PI, for example, you know, with you. But that, you know, you can do that across universities too. You know, I've seen sometimes where small colleges, you know, they don't oftentimes see that the you know, how they can compete, you know, with certain, you know, higher echelon type of grants.
Mm-hmm.
I recommend to them is that they partner, you see, with institutions that already have track records for it, and they get to know other professors, you know, to do that. And you will find that people are willing to collaborate, you know, with each other. It's not all about competition, you know. It's about working and bridging, you know, relationships. So the answer to your question, yes, is yeah. You know, within your own departments or across departments, you know, create, you know, PIs and co-PIs.
Sounds like a better way to deal with the 160 hours.
Spread it out. And that little framework I gave you, those are the key folders you need.
Mm-hmm.
You can have your students help you with it so much. I have saved an arm and a leg, you know, in time by just, you know, getting my students to, you know, I reward them, you know, for this. You know, they by giving them very specific assignments. But I like to teach the roles that they play. And a mentor role is one of those transformative words that is being used in the grant-making world now. And if it becomes a part of your language and how you did it, you know, wow, you acquire the most, you know, wonderful, you know, students who learn not only how to read and research, but how to write, you know, the words that you want them. So they study sociology, they know how to read it, and now they know how to write it. So you get them to, you actually get them to compose those materials and put them into the folders so that you can review them at a time when you can review them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can do this on your at your university. You probably do you have Power SharePoint administrators?
I don't know, but I'm pretty sure we do have a network set up.
Right. So if you've got a virtual private network, they can create a very special folder for you, where you can build these files within them. That way, all the people in your team can have access to them.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make sure it's only your team though. You know, you don't want the world looking at it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you for that.
Yeah, great.
Jay, this is Judy Cavey in California.
Hi, Judy.
Hi. I have a question, please. First, let me just tell you this is wonderful. I'm getting a lot of great information. About 9 years ago, I took a online course through the college that I was working at to get a grant certificate, and so it's been a while since I've looked at any of it. And so I would guess I'll label myself as a new grant writer. And the reason why I got that certificate was to help out some very small up-and-coming nonprofits that I was associated with. Just off the top of your head, can you tell me where you think I should begin when it comes to working with small nonprofits that basically just hit the ground running and are just a mess?
Okay, very good. You know the spreadsheet that I gave, the
yes.
Excel?
Yes.
I want you to, you know, just do you meet with your nonprofits on a regular basis?
Well, I was, and because I gave them a lot of different things that I wanted them to start with based on what I had learned in the course, and I found that the main issue with all of them had to do with their boards of directors.
Yes.
A lot of people were just figureheads and didn't want to do work.
Oh, yes.
Is that usual?
Well, it should not be.
Okay.
Really shouldn't be. You know, if you have a foundation and you have a board, you know, it's that board really which helps you elevates you to getting the money in the first place.
Yeah.
So those are your go-to type of people, and
yeah.
And you want to create like a really nice brochure that markets them. See, oftentimes I think what happens is that, you know, we're so in need of the money, we just run around, you know, trying to get the money.
Right.
We would spend more time in building up the structure, you know, within our foundation.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking. Your executive director is meeting with those board directors and saying, look, I'm going to profile you, and we're going to market you.
Mm-hmm.
And but these are the very specific areas that we're dedicated. This is our mission. This is our purpose. So, but I will say, are you familiar with the Association of Fundraising Professionals?
Yes.
All right. So. And so you know that they have courses and things like that to help guide
mm-hmm.
the process.
Yeah.
And you're familiar with foundationcenter.org?
Right. Uh huh.
Okay. So and you know you can they'll give you there's a lot of free services on that.
Okay.
But for $20 a month, you know you can with your associations
mm-hmm.
And your foundations, you might want to sit down with them right from the beginning and say. Yeah, if we can market our directors so they know how important this is, and then this is once we've done that, you know, because that's a kind of like a sheet that you're going to send,
mm-hmm.
Initial letters of introduction
mm-hmm.
that are associated with your product, I think you can build a, what I call a kudo, you know, within your foundation.
Okay.
But provide them with enough evidence of who is giving what, you see, not just one.
Mm-hmm.
You need your top 10 list, your compatibility list.
Mm-hmm.
You build that top 10 compatibility list, and you start talking to those directors, then I think you're well on your way to getting these folks some money.
Okay. Yeah, it was in an unusual situation, very small town, a lot of the board of directors. I think just like the idea of sitting in a room every once in a while. And didn't quite understand what was necessary. In fact, I wasn't able to meet with one board of directors. I was like having to go through a middleman, and that was very frustrating.
I know what you're saying. I have great empathy for you. I've been there.
Okay. I'm glad I'm not the only one. Well, this was very helpful. Again, thank you so much. And
right.
I do appreciate it. Excuse me?
You sent a survey in?
I'm going to do that right now. I completely missed it, and I have it up on my computer screen.
Yeah, I'll help you with it.
Okay, thank you very much, Jay.
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hello, I have a question. Can you hear me?
Yes, hi.
Hi, this is Mary Edwards. I'm in Minnesota, where it's finally warmed up to 26 above zero.
Hi, Mary. I love what you did in your survey.
Oh, thank you.
You
I run.
Ask about Pennsylvania.
No. I'm in a direct economic development center, and we're no longer funded by EDA. And the college, of course, with all these budget cuts, they told me if I want a center, I better find grants to support me in it. So
oh,
I'm off running on that. And I've got two questions. I signed up. Quite hesitantly, somebody called and had an RFQ, which was request for qualifications,
okay.
And wanted me to be a part of this thing. And it was for sustainability for St. Cloud area. And I was a little bit hesitant because I was signing up to unknown deliverables, but a timeline. And they said no problem. Have you heard of an RFQ?
You know, that always makes you feel uncomfortable. I need to know a little more detail about that. But had you submitted something to that agency?
Yeah, they called.
And they were asking you to.
Basically, they said, "What can you do? What topics? There were a bunch of topics. Which ones can you get involved in?"
Hmm.
And I called one of the other people on campus hoping that I could partner with them, and he said, oh, I'm working on this thing for another firm too.
Oh,
And he was just as uncomfortable as I was.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
There's no money involved yet. They haven't put a dollar amount.
You know, you send that to me. Let me look at it. I'll investigate it. That's very curious.
Okay, thank you. And the second one I'm looking for is the National Bureau of Economic Research has a call for proposals. I don't know if you've seen call for proposals before. They've got proposals for two grants of $20,000 each, and the proposal's not to exceed two pages.
All right.
It sounds like you don't need a budget.
Okay, what is the objective?
It's to, they make grants to support research, and this one is into innovation policy and entrepreneurship.
Okay, is this a state or a local funded agency?
This is the National Bureau of Economic Research.
National Bureau, all right. Wow.
And they've got a grant from the Kauffman Foundation.
Oh, I see. Okay, all right. So they want it 2 pages long.
Yeah.
And, you know, in that, you'll follow your narrative. You know, you'll just make your impact statement, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Make a statement about who you folks are. And if you want, you could just make a very generalized statement. Recently I wrote a grant through the governor's summer program here in Florida.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Our whole budget was one paragraph, you know. It was just, we're going to $35,000. And, we're going to distribute that. We're going to serve 35 students, and it's going to be for a 16-week program.
Okay.
So it doesn't, I think you should say something about how you're going to, spend the money.
I suppose, yeah. And they said they didn't care. You could actually put it on hiring research assistants.
Very nice.
Or even buying out your teaching time, which is kind of what I'm looking for. So I guess you're right. I hadn't thought of telling them. I was for a while thinking, well, then I can just take it and. But yeah, they might want to know what I'm doing with it.
Well, since it's coming through such a wonderfully, very powerful foundation, be sure that you when you get that, that you piggyback that on to two or three other possible grants.
That's kind of what I'm thinking. Like, yes.
Yeah. See, that thing can expand very easily.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in other words, you use the accolade of that grant to help you get another one.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I see what you mean. Sure. Yeah.
Has this a lot to do with economic and workforce development?
This one is more specifically what I want to look at is how non-research universities, the Comp 1 universities with just a master's program, how we can get involved with the community and do outreach most effectively.
I like that. Are you familiar with the Knight Foundation's called the e-journalism studies?
No.
Just send me an email and I'll give you a link to it. I think that's a natural for what you're talking about, how you can link up the university.
Mm-hmm.
With your local community.
Oh, okay.
And the Knight Foundation could come back and even give you some money, too. But it's a perfect setup, and I love that project. I get excited about projects like that, serve and learn projects, through the university.
Right, right.
Perfect, for advancing their career. They learn as they do, type of thing.
Exactly. And, of course, and this is also, we're looking at things like the Buy Dole Act and a number of things of if the people in the community want to get a hold of researchers on campus and they want to invent something, all of this, who owns property rights to it, seems to be a puzzle, especially for small universities.
Yeah, right.
But, okay, I'll send you an email on that. Thank you very much. This is excellent.
Good. Thank you. Good luck.
Thanks.
Hi, Jay. This is Anna Green. How are you?
Hey, Anna. Thanks for sending your survey.
Thank you, and thanks for reminding me of how well Tallahassee weather is. I left there about a year ago, but I was at Florida State. So thanks
for
the reminder.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I actually just wanted to, and I'm going to follow up with an email, and a colleague was also on the phone. She's actually at Florida State right now, but had to hang up. But we wanted to, we're affiliated with an organization called Sisters of the Academy Institute, and I had spoke to Kim about this earlier about like smaller writing groups and other things that TA offer, but particularly with grants, of course, as a 501c3 organization, we actually want to go after some grants and do some things, but we've been putting on workshops about research and writing and about grants and things like that. But now that we've heard your expertise, certainly wanted to follow up with you about, you know, talking to you more, listening to more of your conversations around the documents that you share with us and how possibly in the near future we can do some collaboration. Our organization is about 115 members right now.
That's great.
And so just to kind of just share, collaborate, and kind of move forward, I guess, both of our agendas.
That would be excellent. Now, are you involved in issues of diversity?
Absolutely, yes. Currently, I am. I'm actually working with a program called Early College, which looks at how do we work with 9th through 12th grade high school students to prepare them for college entry, and that's around minority students, African-American males, Hispanic students, and first-time college, first-generation college students. So I'm actually, and it's around the science field, the STEM field, but particularly engineering is going to be like the curriculum focus. So some colleagues and I are actually now in the process of writing some grants, and we'll be submitting one at the end of April to NSF. Particularly, it's called the Technical Education and Community College Focus. So we are in the process of trying to do that. So that's what else certainly sparked my interest with being on this call today and making sure that I'm dotting my I's and crossing my T's. And some of the things you spoke of, we were fortunate to do it, but there were a lot of things that you spoke of that I can see we got to go back and revisit.
Yes, let's definitely talk some more. I think right off the top of my head, have you done any work with the Siemens Corporation or Discovery Communications?
No, have not heard of them. I'm actually new to the position for about 6 months now, so I'm really just trying to hit the ball running real quick. So
let's,
I'm writing
I'll
that down. You
said
you. Discovery?
Yeah, Discovery Communications, you know, like which is like the Discovery Channel, you know, for
okay.
example.
Okay.
There's a grant right now that's open that sounds like it'd be perfect for what you want to do.
Oh, okay. And then what was the other one?
Siemens, S-I-E-M-E-N-S. It's a huge corporation.
Yeah, okay. Now that I'm writing it down and hearing you, correct. Yeah, okay.
And especially if you're doing STEM work,
mm-hmm.
the current issues of climate and energy. But a lot of this we're talking about is, student retention and progress. You know,
exactly.
Circulation. Getting them successful when they're in school, right?
Correct.
But,
entry
yeah, you have
and graduation.
I've got a great background in that area, actually.
Oh, good, good. Well, yeah, I certainly like to continue to communicate with you via email and other options that we might have, because certainly is a population that needs to be served one way or another. So,
Grants Gamesmanship
is an educational presentation brought to you by the Text and Academic Authors Association. Thank you.